Welcome to Vigilante News Press Radio, where we are tired of government corruption, the UN infiltration of our U.S. sovereignty, communist socialist Nazis, horse prostitute media corruption, secret globalist meetings, and the perversion of our local justice system. We will expose you, every single one of you. If you're wondering what we're about, well, when authoritarians pretend they are pious and revel in nitpicky control freak power trips, which they like to impose onto the public while they themselves are morally defunct, and in secret are vile creatures swimming around in a cesspit of scum and rat vomit, we need to expose them. Today is the 30th of December, 2012. If you'd like to download this podcast, go to vigilantenewspress.com. That is vigilantenewspress.com, and click on podcast. Also, we encourage you to get active in our forum and to become an active vigilante member of our press by helping us expose the local red coat army socialist communist brown floaters in your area. Anyways, I want to thank you for tuning in. I am your host, Shalom Yale. If you have any feedback or comments, email us at vigilantenewspress@yahoo.com. That is vigilantenewspress@yahoo.com. Also, let us know if you'd like to be a guest or co-host or do an interview. Anyways, first I just want to play a quick testimony from a lady known as Norma McCorvey. She was the original person of Roe versus Wade, the person that they used, and she said it on other radio shows. I've heard her pretty much in tears say how she was manipulated. But anyways, here's her testimony, and you just need to hear it. And I think I'm going to make it a normal thing to play it, so people know that, you know, this whole thing was just a farce, and that this lady was manipulated. Here it is.
I'm Norma McCorvey, the former Jane Roe of the Roe v. Wade decision that brought legal child killing to America. I was persuaded by feminist attorneys to lie, to say that I'd been raped and I needed an abortion. It was all a lie. Since then, over 50 million babies have been murdered. I will take this burden to my grave. Please don't follow my mistakes. Do not vote for Barack Obama. He murders babies.
All right. Well, that's the testimony of Norma McCorvey of Roe versus Wade. We need to be fully aware of the Holocaust going on in this nation. A Holocaust of innocent blood. A lot of people have a lot of blood on their hands that they're going to have to answer to. And unfortunately, their bloodshed is dragging this nation down in the eyes of Yah. But anyways, move on to this week's news here, which as it was in last week's globalist run broadcast of manipulation and disinformation, that guns are evil and how we are evil who own them, and that we must answer to the godlike clergy of the authoritarian government offering to them sacrifices of gun registration and assault rifles, and that only then we would appease them. You can't appease this blood-sucking tick called the government. You give in to that demand, it won't be long till they demand more. It's just never enough with them. And you know what? Who cares what these backstabbing crooks want? If you're a God-fearing man that is worried about them making this law, don't! Don't! It says to obey the laws of the land, but you're not the one violating them. They are. They are violating them. They are violating the laws of this land. They are perverting justice. They are robbing the widow. And they are murdering the fatherless. They are evil, not you. Keep your guns. You do not have to obey unlawful laws written by thieves and murderers. They are a servant of the people, and they have violated our laws and our moral standards. They are in violation of the Constitution. They are in violation of the Bill of Rights. They have violated many, many laws written in our federal government and in our states. It's time we hold these globalist infiltrators and their hordes of loyalists accountable, just as the founders did with the King of England and their hordes of loyalist redcoats. Not only do I support and congratulate the Oath Keepers, I also urge you to make an oath of your own that you will pursue and uphold justice, that you will stand to protect the God-given freedoms of your neighbor and countrymen, and that you will defend the lives and property of the weak, helpless, and elderly from thieves and men of bloodshed. God will not condemn us for doing such things, but he will condemn those who don't, who turn their back on their neighbor. He will strengthen the hands of those who aim to uphold those, to protect those people. And, you know, I know this is not a kingdom of this world, or this is not his kingdom, this kingdom of the world, but I'm not talking about upholding any kingdom. I'm talking about upholding a peaceful and free civilization where people are free, free to think, free to work, free to live, and free to seek God freely in truth without being forced to attend a government church or agree with its doctrines, politically or faith-wise. Anyways, this is the job of the Good Samaritan. You who pass on will have to answer for it. So, anyways, I have a headline that goes along with this that contains a testimony. A testimony by a lady known as Kitty Werthermann. She survived the horrors of Hitler's Germany, and as an Austrian resident, she lived through what would be a strange parallel to exactly what is happening at a slower pace right now in the U.S. What happened to them happened in a very short time. What's happening to us has been happening for the last 60 years. And I'll play something later on that by a renowned guy. So be looking forward to some clips here. But anyways, I'm going to go over this testimony. It's going to be pretty long. And please forgive me. The microphone I have is freezing cold, so it's not really working very well. It's making me sound a little bit more deeper than usual. But anyways, if you'd bear with me, we'll go through this. And please pay attention to her testimony. I mean, I've narrowed it down as much as I can. She said a lot. This is pretty much a narrowed down form of her testimony that she made to packalertpress.com. Anyways, it's titled, "She Survived Hitler and Wants to Warn America." Anyways, here goes her testimony. She says, "What I'm about to tell you is something you've probably never heard or read in history books. I am a witness to history. I cannot tell you that Hitler took Austria by tanks and guns. It would distort history. We voted him in. We elected him by a landslide, 98% of the vote. Everyone thinks that Hitler just rolled in with his tanks and took Austria by force. Not so. In 1938, Austria was in deep depression. Nearly one-third of our workforce was unemployed. We had 25% inflation and 25% bank loan interest rates." You can think that, I'm sure they could think they're globalist bankers there too from Eastern Europe. They were contaminating. Anyways, I'll move on here. "Farmers and businesses, people were declaring bankruptcy daily. Young people were going from house to house begging for food. Not that they didn't want to work. There simply weren't any jobs. My mother was a Christian woman and believed in helping people in need. Every day we cooked a big kettle of soup and baked bread for to feed those poor, hungry people. About 30 daily. We looked to our neighbor on the north, Germany, where Hitler had been in power since 1933. We had been told that they didn't have unemployment or crime, and they had a high standard of living. Nothing was ever said about the persecution of any group, Jewish or otherwise. We were led to believe that everyone in Germany was happy. We wanted the same way of life in Austria. We were promised that a vote for Hitler would mean the end of unemployment and help for the family. Hitler also said that businesses would be assisted and farmers would get their farms back. 98% of the population voted to annex Austria to Germany and have Hitler for our ruler. We were overjoyed, and for 3 days, we danced in the streets and had candlelight parades. The new government opened up big filled kitchens, and everyone was fed. After the election, German officials were appointed, and like a miracle, we suddenly had law and order. 3 or 4 weeks later, everyone was employed. The government made sure that a lot of work was created through the public work service. Hitler decided we should have equal rights for women. Before this, it was a custom that married Austrian women did not work outside of the home, and able-bodied husbands would be looked down on if they couldn't support his family. Many women in the teaching profession were elated that they could retain the jobs they previously had been required to give up for marriage. Then we lost religious education for kids. Our education was normalized. I attended a very good public school. The population was predominantly Catholic, so we had religion in our schools. Now, I don't agree with the Catholic religion, but anyways. The day we elected Hitler, March 13, 1938, I walked into my schoolroom to find the crucifix replaced by Hitler's picture hanging next to a Nazi flag. Our teacher was a very devout woman, stood up and told the class we wouldn't pray or have religion anymore. Instead, we sang Deutschland, Deutschland, Erber Allies, I don't know what that is, and had physical education. Sunday became National Youth Day with compulsory attendance. Parents were not pleased about the sudden change in curriculum. They were told that if they did not send us, they would receive a stiff letter of warning the first time. The second time, they would be fined in the equivalent of $300 or 300 francs or whatever they had, douche marks. And the third time, they would be subject to jail. And then things got worse. The first 2 hours consisted of political indoctrination. The rest of the day, we had sports. As time went along, we loved it. Oh, we had so much fun and got our sports equipment free. We would go home and gleefully tell our parents about the wonderful time we had. My mother was very unhappy when the next term started, so she took me out of public school and put me in a convent. I told her she couldn't do that, and she told me that someday when I grew up, I would be grateful. I hated it at first, but felt I could tolerate it. Every once in a while, on holidays, I went home. I would go back to my old friends and ask what was going on and what they were doing. Their loose lifestyle was very alarming to me. They lived without religion. By that time, mothers were glorified for having a baby for Hitler. It seems strange to me that society changed so suddenly. As time went along, I realized what a great deed my mother did so that I wasn't exposed to that kind of humanistic philosophy. Then food rationing began. In 1939, the war started and a food bank was established. All food was rationed and could be purchased using food stamps. At the same time, a full employment law was passed, which meant if you didn't work, you didn't get a ration card. And if you didn't have a card, you starved to death. Women who stayed home to raise their families didn't have any marketable skills and often had to take jobs more suited for men. Soon after this, the draft was implemented. It was compulsory for young people, male and female, to give 1 year to the labor corps. During the day, the girls worked on the farms, and at night, they returned to their barracks for military training just like the boys. They were trained to be anti-aircraft gunners and participated in signal corps after the labor corps. They were not discharged, but were used in the front lines. When I got back to Austria to visit my family and friends, most of these women are emotional cripples because they just were not equipped to handle the horrors of combat. 3 months before I returned, 18, I was severely injured in an air raid attack. I nearly had a leg amputated, so I was spared having to go into the labor corps and into military service. When the mothers had to go out into the workforce, the government immediately established child care centers. You could take your children, ages 4 weeks old, to school age and leave them there around the clock, 7 days a week, under the total care of the government. Oh, that must have been wonderful. The state raised a whole generation of children. There were no motherly women to take care of the children, just people highly trained in child psychology. By this time, no one talked about equal rights. We knew we had been had. Before Hitler, we had very good medical care. Many American doctors trained at the University of Vienna. After Hitler, health care was socialized, free for everyone. Doctors were salaried by the government. The problem was, since it was free, the people were going to the doctors for everything. When the good doctor arrived at his office at 8 a.m., 40 people were already waiting, and at the same time, the hospitals were full. As for health care, our tax rates went up to 80%, and our income, 80% of our income. Newlyweds immediately received a $1,000 loan from the government to establish a household. We had big programs for families. All daycare and education were free. High schools were taken over by the government, and college tuition was subsidized. Everyone was entitled to free handouts, such as food stamps, clothing, and housing. We had another agency designed for to monitor business. We had consumer protection, too. We were told how to shop and what to buy. Free enterprise was essentially abolished. We had a planning agency specifically designed for farmers. The agents would go to the farms, count the livestock, and then tell the farmers what to produce and how to produce it. In 1944, I was a student teacher in a small village in the Alps. The villagers were surrounded by mountain passes, which in the winter were closed off with snow, causing people to be isolated. So people intermarried and offspring were sometimes retarded. When I arrived, I was told there were 15 mentally retarded adults, but they were all useful and did good manual work. I knew one named Vincent very well. He was a janitor of the school. One day I looked out the window and saw Vincent and others getting into a van. I asked my superior where they were going. She said to an institution where the state health department would teach them a trade and to read and write. The families were required to sign papers with a little clause that they could not visit for 6 months. They were told visits would interfere with the program and might cause homesickness. As time passed, letters started to dribble back saying these people died a natural, merciful death. The villagers were not fooled. We suspected what was happening. Those people left in excellent physical health and all died within 6 months. We called this euthanasia. Then they took our guns. Next came gun registration. People were getting injured by guns. Hitler said that the real way to catch criminals, we still had a few, was by matching serial numbers on guns. Most citizens were law-abiding and dutifully marched to the police station to register their firearms. Not long afterward, the police said that it was best for everyone to turn in their guns. The authorities already knew that knew who had them, so it was futile not to comply voluntarily. No more freedom of speech. Anyone who said something against the government was taken away. We knew many people who were arrested, not only Jews, but also priests and ministers who spoke up. Totalitarianism didn't come quickly. It took 5 years, from 1938 to 1943, to realize full dictatorship in Austria. Had it happened overnight, my countrymen would have fought to the last breath. Instead, we had a creeping gradualism. Now, our only weapons were broom handles. The whole idea sounds almost unbelievable that the state, little by little, eroded our freedom. This is my eyewitness account. Now, I read this out because this is exactly what's happening to this nation. Now, what happened to them happened in a five-year period of time. For us, it's taken a little longer, and it's happening. Look around. Wake up. If you're not awake, wake up. Like it says at the intro, wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Like it says in the outro, wake up, wake up, wake up. It even says wake up and rebel. You got to wake up. You got to know what's, you got to look around. Quit cowering. Don't let some idiot that's dribbling all over himself tell you that you're a conspiracy theorist? You got eyes. You're not stupid. They're stupid. Just because they're clever in their little insults and whatever, just, you know, cast it out. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. You do, and don't bother waking those idiots up. They want to stay stupid. Let them stay stupid. They ain't gonna argue. You know, you're going to sit there and argue with somebody about being stupid? If they're going to be stupid, they want to be stupid. So just let them be. You know, if they're not going to listen, you know, whatever, you know. But anyways, I'm going to play some clips here because a lot of people think that this revelation of the current state of our nation, that it's a new one. It's not. The truth is that it is most definitely not. People have been warning about this very fall and this reign of tyrannical rule, which is now being imposed on us by the collective globalists. Now, I'm going to play a couple of clips of a great herald of old, Robert Welch, which he made in 1966. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not absolutely sure on that, but it was around that time, where he warns about the global occultists, their tricks, and their ultimate goal. I also filtered out the static of these old clips and improved the sound quality of them. They had like a pretty bad little staticky sound in the background, so they sound a lot better now, at least for radio. Now, I'll only be playing a couple of the portions of it because he goes into history, and the history is good. It's very well laid. It's very well laid out, and I advise you to listen to the whole thing. However, it's kind of redundant for radio and for the short amount of time I have. I just wanted to play the things that would draw your attention because, you know, this was done back then. These guys were part of the John Birch Society, or some of the founders of it, which is a great society, by the way. The powers that be have done a lot to try to demonize that organization, and time again, time has shown that they were right. Everything they've said has slowly been happening, and while they are paying off the press to say conspiracy, they're being shown to be the truth. The people that are saying, expressing the truth, and have been expressing the truth since their founding. Now, he uses the term communist the same way most of us in this movement would use the term globalists or fascists or technocrats, but he's describing the same enemy in great detail. Anyways, enough of me. Here is the honorable herald of his day, Robert Welch. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, to make the history of the great conspiracy both clear and convincing, we need 100 volumes of 1,000 pages each. And we hope that those scholarly volumes will all be written in due course as a guide and a warning to future generations. But at present, we have a more immediate and more urgent task. We want to give you simply an outline of the progress of this organized evil force from its beginning up to the present time. The aim of the conspirators always has been and still is to impose the brutal tyranny of their rule over the whole human race. Today, they are at last within striking distance of that ultimate goal. And we agree with the Honorable J. Edgar Hoover, who stated in the April 1961 FBI Law Enforcement Bulletin, that the way to fight it, communism, is to study it, understand it, and discover what can be done about it. We think that the only way to stop the communists is to create sufficient understanding soon enough among enough people as to what is really taking place all around us. So let's do our best within the limits that are practicable for this occasion to review the whole fantastic story step by step. A, the early background. Step one, we must hunt the first steps largely in the shadows rather than in the substance of history, for the conspiracy is deep-rooted. 200 years ago, or during the last half of the 18th century, there were in Europe many secret societies with grandiose dreams of overthrowing all existing human institutions and of rising out of the resulting chaos as the all-powerful rulers of a new order of civilization. Of these groups, the Illuminati, founded in Bavaria by Adam Weishaupt on May 1, 1776, was undoubtedly the most important. Step number two. By 1789, the Illuminati were already strong enough to have had a great deal to do with planning and precipitating the Holocaust known as the French Revolution. In that upheaval, we find many elements of communist strategy and purpose with which we are familiar today. One was the ruthless undermining of rulers and governments in order to destroy them. Another was the destruction of all religion by substituting the worship of reason in its place. You will remember that the revolutionaries erected in Paris a statue to the goddess of reason as a symbol of this change. A third element was the fomenting by a few professional agitators of mob action made to appear as a spontaneous uprising of the people. A fourth was the massive use of terror to silence all opposition. A fifth was the use of the manufactured smear to destroy the enemies of the revolution or its temporary leaders. And all of these objectives and methods, which sound like rehearsals for what is happening throughout the world today, had either been specifically set forth by Weishaupt for his Order of Illuminati, or were the practical applications of his program. Three, by 1795, the French Revolution had run its horrible course, and there was a gradual return, even in France, to traditional beliefs, values, and institutions. Although it led to the Napoleonic Wars, which, for the next 20 years, devastated so much of Europe, this revolutionary fire in France had failed to set off a continent-wide social conflagration as the Illuminati and similar groups had hoped and planned. And henceforth, the Illuminati observed even more closely than before the original Weishaupt instruction that the very existence of the order should be denied and kept secret at all costs. But the fact that the Illuminati were active at the end of the 18th century with a growing reach and influence in many countries is clearly proved in the detailed histories of Robeson and the Abbé Barrouel. And the short-lived Babeuf conspiracy reveals that other groups, though possibly allied or subsidiary to the Illuminati, were working for the same totally destructive purposes. Four. During the 19th century, some of these secret societies and subversive groups appear to have grown and coalesced into the communist conspiracy as we know it today. However hidden the controlling nerve centers may have been, by 1848, some of the activities and even organizational structures of the conspiracy were becoming visible. The first important declaration of purposes, using the name of communism as we understand the word today, was issued by Karl Marx in 1848. Communist plotting was at work to some extent in the numerous uprisings of that year, 1848, as it has been in almost all insurrections and wars involving European nations since that time. Five. But the communist movement is only a tool of the total conspiracy. As secret as the communist activities and organizations generally appear, they are part of an open book compared to the secrecy enveloping some higher degree of this diabolic force. The extrinsic evidence is strong and convincing that by the beginning of the 20th century, there had evolved an inner core of conspiratorial power able to direct and control subversive activities which were worldwide in their reach, incredibly cunning and ruthless in their nature, and brilliantly far-sighted and patient in their strategy. Whether or not this increasingly all-powerful hidden command was due to an unbroken continuation of Weishaupt's Illuminati, or was a distillation from the leadership of this and other groups, we do not know. Some of them may never have been communists, while others were. To avoid as much dispute as possible, therefore, let's call this ruling clique simply the insiders. But we do need some such term for both clarity and convenience. And it should be recognized that always pushing and promoting each other into higher positions on every road to power and wealth and fame has been a vital part of the strategy of this fraternity from the beginning and of the motivation of its members at any given time. The goal for each generation of conspirators, the tie that bound them together, lay in what this self-perpetuating body was to become. But the contemporary reward and satisfaction was in the becoming. 6. For more than 100 years now, the conspiracy had pushed on steadily along many avenues, all leading to the one goal of world rule. During the last half of the 19th century, the insiders were using the communists, the anarchists, the socialists of various hues and kinds, and dozens of other groups to promote their purposes. Many of these groups were largely unconscious of how they were being spurred on and guided by a few clever insiders. While under the guise of humanitarianism and in the pretended promotion of freedom and equality and brotherhood, these insiders and the gullible idealists who served as their dupes were busily undermining the very beliefs and institutions which made the 19th century a high watermark of such civilization as man has laboriously achieved. One broad avenue down which these conspiratorial forces advanced was known as progressive legislation. The very same collectivist theories and demagogic pretenses which had destroyed earlier civilizations were now paraded forth in the disguise of new and modern concepts. What Pisistratus had done in Athens in the 6th century B.C. with the leverage of his vaunted concern for the working classes, Bismarck now began in Germany by basically the same approach. The controls which Diocletian had imposed on the Roman people 1600 years before, entirely for the good of the people themselves, you understand, were now matched by one socialistic regime in France after another. And in England, the advance of government paternalism caused Herbert Spencer to comment that the ultimate result of protecting fools from their own folly must be to fill the planet full of fools. Now, this great and growing stream of socialistic legislation was made possible, of course, by idealists with only the noblest of intentions, combined with or led by venal politicians with no more nefarious objectives than glory and pelf for themselves. In the rotting French Republic of 1900 A.D., as in the rotting Roman Empire of 300 A.D., most of the rot was introduced in the name of progress. Most of the people of Europe and America, for the past 100 years, for instance, have gradually been led to believe fervently that everything in the way of security legislation, from the first Workmen's Compensation Acts under Bismarck to the latest Medicare monstrosity under Lyndon Johnson, was a proof of their own nobility of outlook. And this is not the place to go into any discussion as to which pieces of the mosaic may really have been justified and worthwhile. For unrecognized by the visionary do-gooders and even by the opportunistic politicians, who alike were inveigled into pushing along this new humanitarianism, was the constant thread of its hidden purpose. That actual purpose was, on the part of the instigators who contrived it, always and by all means, to reduce the responsibilities and rights of individual citizens while steadily increasing the quantity, the reach, and the potential tyranny of governments. This was the real long-range goal of the insiders who designed and controlled the movement, but who had realized from the beginning that communism must largely be advanced by non-communists who know not what they are doing. In the United States, with its remaining pioneer spirit and ubiquitous opportunities, the season was not yet ripe for offering this mess of pottage. And timing is always an essential part of communist strategy. But there was still plenty that could be done as a part of the grand design. So by 1914, the insiders, with comparatively few agents, but tremendous influence and cunning, had already brought about in our own country such decisively important measures in their program as central banking, a graduated personal income tax, and the direct election of senators. The brilliantly contrived central banking apparatus was called the Federal Reserve System. As in the case of the graduated income tax, its long-range significance and use could be well hidden under the pretended objectives at the time of its founding, and its ultimate value to the conspirators could be tremendously enhanced by the character and ability of the good men drawn into its top positions during the early decades of its existence. But what this function and prestige of the Federal Reserve System would inevitably come to mean, in time and in actual practice, was the control of credit, the control of the money supply, the ability to spend with increasing profligacy, and the means to steal continuously from the people by the debasement of our currency on the part of the federal government. And we have reached the stage today where all of these results have visibly come to pass. The graduated income tax, of course, was the second plank in Karl Marx's program for imposing communism on any country. From the very beginning, the whole scheme included, without the knowledge or understanding of the American people, a parallel gimmick for the benefit of the insiders, which we can identify as the system of tax-exempt foundations. The actual result of this development has been, as it was intended to be, that the wealthiest men in America have been able to accumulate untold billions of liquid wealth in these foundations by escaping the increasingly confiscatory taxes which prevented such accumulations outside of the foundation formula, and still have practically as much control of what can be done with this money and how it shall be spent in helping to move our country leftward as if these billions were in their private bank accounts. Since the founding of the Illuminati, each generation of insiders has visibly followed, so far as they were able, Weishaupt's stated and aggressive policy of pulling within their conspiratorial circle the sons of the very powerful and the very rich. In the United States, this policy, combined with the income tax squeeze on one side and the foundation loophole on the other, has gradually brought fantastic wealth into the service of the conspiracy while putting ever greater handicaps and stronger brakes on the acquisition or the uses of money by those who might oppose the plans of the insiders. And the direct election of senators was of tremendously more importance than was realized when the 17th Amendment was adopted in 1913. For as long as the senators for any state had been elected by the legislature of that state, they clearly represented the state itself as a sovereign entity within a federal union, and not just the citizens of the United States within certain boundaries, as was the case for the members of the House of Representatives. This distinction had been carefully planned by our founding fathers in their studied effort to extend and improve upon what Cicero had praised so highly as the diffusion of government in the early Roman Republic. We had a division of federal governmental power into three branches, the executive, legislative, and judicial. We had the grand division between federal power and governmental power retained by the states. And we had the further division of the state power, again between three branches. The insiders, however, wanted gradually and eventually to bring about a concentration of all governmental power into the hands of the executive department of one central government. And the direct election of senators was actually their first huge legalistic step in that direction. Number 7. It was during this period, too, that the insiders learned to foment, nourish, magnify, and utilize every natural division among men, whether based on race, color, language, or religion, to create strife ranging from a precinct political feud to a major war between nations, to stimulate and control both sides of all such bitter divisions among mankind, and to profit enormously from the opportunities thus offered them to grasp more power amid the resulting chaos, resignation, and despair. Today, the most important basic split among mankind lies in color. The communists are making the greatest possible capital for themselves out of that division, and are planning to make even more capital in the future. But in the 19th century, the division of greatest significance was between Jew and Gentile. So the most valuable plank in this area of communist strategy was the revival, nourishment, and magnification of the dislike, distrust, and bitterness now associated with the term antisemitism. The communists are always sharpening and using both edges of this sword. In their efforts to weaken and destroy the John Birch Society, just for illustration, they have dupes and agents clamoring incessantly that the society is anti-Semitic. And at the very same time, they have agent provocateur everywhere trying to persuade members of the society that the whole communist movement is simply a Jewish conspiracy, and that these members are wasting their time in the John Birch Society because its leaders do not have the courage to name the enemy. And by this typical communist method, they have made antisemitism into one of the most powerful weapons in their whole arsenal of destruction. Number 8. But the decisive success of the insiders and of the various groups and forces through which they have worked in this more shadowy period of their machinations and advance prior to 1917 lay in their instigation of the First World War. Looking back now, it is easy to see how this great beginning of the long, deliberate destruction of the soundest values and most stable institutions of our civilization, at the cost of the cruel killing of so many of the finest youth of Europe and America, was deliberately contrived by power-hungry criminal megalomaniacs in this clique of insiders simply to serve their own purposes. The very slogan, "To make the world safe for democracy," by which Americans were inspired to greater enthusiasm in their contribution to this Holocaust, should have been a giveaway to any intelligent student of history and political science. For at least since the time of the Greeks, it has been well known, as it clearly was to our founding fathers, that democracy was not only the worst of all forms of government, but was the last direct step of any nation and any people on the road to an unbridled mobocratic dictatorship. By 1916, it was already so important to the insiders to convert our constitutional republic into a democracy that Edward Mandel House and his dupes and allies even used their war, in part, to promote the proper attitude for such a change on the part of the American people. But this was only a comparatively small part of the mighty betrayal, not only of the United States, but of our whole human race and of its reasonably humane civilization. For once America had been enticed by lying propaganda and tremendous cunning into this great senseless European war, the world could never be the same again, nor as happy and sane a world again for at least a long, long time, as the insiders were well aware, and they undoubtedly rejoiced at the success of their satanic schemes.
All right. Well, I hope you're paying close attention to what this man was saying. He's hit the nail right on the head. Anyways, we're skipping this layout on history that he's set in this, and that's like cutting out another 20 minutes. We're just going to pick it back up on his closing. So, anyways, again, here is the Honorable Robert Welch.
To prevent this arousing of the American people before it is too late, the communists are counting on certain basic accomplishments of their long-range strategy and its supporting propaganda. We list those basic accomplishments below with a few comments that seem in order. A. The fundamentally decent American mind has been blinded to the fact that any group of men can be so evil and so completely devoid of all conscience as the communists and the insiders above them. The only remedy for this mental blindness is sufficient study of the conspiratorial activities and massive cruelties which have brought the world to its present state. B. Many Americans feel that the whole battle is an ideological one. This is exactly what the communists want us to believe. They will go to any lengths and even subsidize their opposition to maintain the appearance that this is a war of ideas. For the communists wish above all else to distract your attention from the workings of the conspiracy. And there are conservatives who will still be ridiculing the conspiratorial theory of history and feeling that we simply have to win a vast debate with the liberals if a few years from now the armed police of a central tyranny knock on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning and haul them away to some unknown destination. Today, they're like a man accepting the invitation of a thug who says to him, "Let's you and me argue heatedly over our disagreements while my partner is slipping up behind your back to cut your throat." C. There are now another huge number of Americans who, aware of the menace of the communist conspiracy, believe that the major danger lies in a surprise attack from communist military forces. The communists have been working steadily for many years to make this threat appear realistic. For it not only draws attention away from the takeover by internal subversion, which is going on steadily all of the time, but it actually serves as an excuse for the seizure of more reins of power and the establishment of more controls by the very agents of the conspiracy who are carrying out this conquest by subversion. What our frightened fellow citizens in this category fail to realize, what some of our most patriotic military leaders, because of the very nature of their training, simply refuse to recognize, is that today Moscow and Washington are, and for many years have been, but two hands of one body controlled by one brain. You do not have your left hand fight your right hand or go through the motions of doing so unless it is to amuse or deceive children or to distract their attention from other matters while you're putting them to sleep. And these observations clearly apply to the show that is now being staged in Vietnam. D. There are also millions of Americans who now have a vested interest, intellectual, social, or even financial, in the falsehoods which they have gradually absorbed from insidious and carefully disguised communist propaganda. To stand up now and admit I was wrong would hurt not only their pride, but perhaps their reputations as knowledgeable sophisticates among their country club friends or their business associates. So they become daily more willful and more adamant in refusing to recognize the communist poisons in the mental fare they have been accepting and spreading all around them. Let's hope that they do not have to find insight, wisdom, and repentance easier to come by in a concentration camp. E. Finally, we have the problem of a very considerable number of spineless jellyfish going around among us wearing human clothes. They are aware of what is happening. They do not know whether it can be stopped or not. But if so, they murmur quietly to themselves, "Let George do it. I do not want to become involved." These people feel that by not opposing communism, they will be safer from recrimination if and when the actual takeover arrives and the police state terror begins. In this attitude, they are not only cowards, but fools. For Lenin himself gave them the answer to that false hope in his order to the secret police, which appeared in Pravda on December 25th, 1918. It reads as follows, quote, "We are not waging war against separate individuals. We are exterminating the bourgeoisie as a class. Do not ask for incriminating evidence to prove that the prisoner opposed the Soviet government, either by arms or word. Your first duty is to ask him what class he belongs to, what were his origin, education, and occupation. These questions should decide the fate of the prisoner. This is the meaning and essence of Red Terror." Unquote. And the only change in communists since Lenin's day is that they have become infinitely more powerful. Finally, ladies and gentlemen of our listening or reading audience, our whole story can best be summarized in one vernacular and very earthy expression. In the 20th century, modern man is simply being played for a sucker by an immoral gang of sophisticated criminals. These cunning megalomaniacs seek to make themselves the absolute rulers of a human race of enslaved robots in which every civilized trait has been destroyed. The insiders at the top and all their communist minions constitute only a tiny percentage of the race they plan to rule. Although they now occupy most of the positions of great prestige and influence in Washington and London and Paris, as well as in the financial, educational, and publishing circles of the whole world, their power rests entirely on bluff, pretense, and deception. Both their success and their purposes are contrary to the whole current of human history. They are sitting precariously on the gigantic powder keg of all honest human emotions. Despite their arrogant assurance on the contemporary scene, they themselves are well aware that sooner or later, the whole framework of their cruel power will be blown to pieces by a mighty uprising of the incalculable forces of man's moral principles love for freedom, and common sense. How soon that day of delivery may come will depend on you.
Well, that is the wonderful heraldings of Robert Welch, who has accurately gave a layout of the tyranny that is unfolding before us right now. I mean, idiot idol worshippers have made gods of people for less. So, I mean, he's laid it out from its beginning stages all the way to its final end. And we're pretty much way beyond the middle of that right now. And right now, we have a chance to get out of it. I mean, they implemented this plan with, according to the testimony of Kitty, in 5 years. And they could have done it. They couldn't have done it here like that. It's been going very slow, and God's been very merciful with us. But a lot of you have been falling for the indoctrination of the bought and paid for prostitute media. When they call you conspiracy theory, you've been putting your little tail between your legs and running off like a little coward. Who cares about their social stink? They're the social stink. You need to stick your finger in their face and say, shut up and get out. I know that's a flat-out lie. What do you do with liars? You later agree with them? No. You call them a liar to their face, and then you discredit them. And that's what you need to do with these people. We need to expose them, which is the whole purpose of this show, is to encourage everybody in their local areas to grab that little boss hog guy in your local area and expose every little thing he does. Because this is an entire network, and their little minions are a part of that network. And if you take down every single little minion in this network of corruption that they have, we will win. You got to nail these guys. And it's not hard. They're so steeped in perversion and fleshiness that it's easy to catch them doing anything, because they do it. And they do it arrogantly in a lot of places. They don't even try to hide it. They know they got the local paper bought and paid for. They know they got all the richies all invited to their parties or doing their will. Eat one or the other. One hand washes the other. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed those clips, and I hope you enjoyed our show. But that's all the time we have left for today. I want to thank you for your listenership. And if you have any comments or questions or whatever, just email us at vigilantenewspress@yahoo.com. That is vigilantenewspress@yahoo.com. Feel free to email me. I'll talk with you. I'm not a jerk like some people. Anyways, you can also find us on Facebook and Planet InfoWars Group. You can also follow us on Twitter at Vigilante News. Please subscribe to all our podcasting services and store food for your own safety.
And while the people sleep.
Anyways, take it easy. Y'all bless. Bye.
Too comfortable to face it. Your lives are so incomplete. And nothing and no one can replace it. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up and rebel.